Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 63rd episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloney, and I'm one of your hosts. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. Just want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. We have a special guest, and appreciate all the feedback that you've given us over the last couple of weeks. Appreciate the ratings on iTunes as well as the blog comments on eduallstars.com. Those help out tremendously as far as viewership and listenership.
And this week's Edu All-Stars podcast is proudly sponsored by Miami Device. Miami Device is going to be an amazing and fun two-day conference happening November 6th and 7th in sunny Miami, Florida. The lineup of keynotes and featured speakers is unlike any other event, and if you have not gone to miamidevice.org to check it out, you definitely should. You will want to be there for that event, trust me. So hopefully you go over to miamidevice.org and check that out.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet using the hashtag EduAllStars, no spaces there. And we love seeing the conversations, and Todd is pretty good about doing some tweeting during the episode.
And this week, we are very honored to have a good friend of mine, Tom Murray, on as our guest this week. He is a state and district digital learning director, a blogger, speaker, consultant, and also the co-founder of the hashtag EdTech Chat. So thanks, Tom, for coming on with us tonight.
Hello, gentlemen. It's good to be here, and hope you are both doing well. Thanks for having me on the show tonight.
Yep.
Well, Tom, the best way we always like to start is by hearing a little bit about your background and how you got into education.
Sure. I actually started at college. I went to Muhlenberg College, which is in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I actually started out pre-med. I wanted to be a pediatrician. I enjoyed working with kids, and something about sophomore year hit me where I decided I really wanted to work with kids on a daily basis and not just when they were sick. So I actually started out as an elementary classroom teacher. I taught fourth grade for 4 years in the Quakertown School District, which is in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, about an hour north of Philadelphia. After teaching fourth grade, during that time, I developed a real love for technology. It wasn't something I had prior to that. I saw its impact on kids. So I actually went and I taught business education, kind of had my own computer lab, pretty traditional setup, a good 10 years ago now, and taught business education for 2 years. Shortly thereafter, I moved, same building, but I moved to the role of being an assistant principal. After that, I moved to be an elementary principal for 3 years, which is one of the greatest jobs on the planet, right, Todd?
That's right.
And after moving to that, I moved to the director of technology and cyber education for the district. I spent 14 years in Quakertown. And as you just said, I'm now the state and district digital learning director for the Alliance for Excellent Education out of Washington, D.C. So it has been a fun ride. I can't seem to hold a job down, I think, for more than 3 years, it seems, but I am enjoying myself and doing what we're doing every day, serving kids.
When did you know you were ready to kind of get out of the classroom, move into that AP role?
You know, that's a good question. I spent a lot of time when I was back at the district. I would get often asked that question a lot. And, you know, I don't ever think you feel that. I shouldn't say you don't ever, but I know for me, I wrestled with it for a long time because, you know, as a classroom teacher, I can remember the tears streaming down my eyes every year at the end of the year when those kids would walk out on that last day. And that real intimate relationship you have with them. And, you know, at what point is it okay to take that jump or cross the line or, as some people say, you know, cross over the dark side of being an administrator? I had a couple administrative colleagues that were really mentors for me, and they, one of them actually said, who was the head principal at the time, that he said to me, you know, I really want to see you running this building in 2 to 3 years when I retire. And I remember the belief he had in me, the encouragement that he had. And at that point, I had actually had multiple master's degrees at that point already. I went back for a third master's degree in educational leadership, and it was the right opportunity at the right time. They pulled me out of the classroom to finish a year when the assistant principal had at that point had retired in like February. They asked me to step out, and it was kind of a great spot for me because I wasn't committed long term, and it gave me a little bit of a taste of the admin side if I wanted it, and then it really just felt right. The bottom line for me is I felt like I was able to grow my circle of influence. I was able to influence the lives of 1,000 children every day as opposed to a classroom. So it's a different relationship, but I felt like I was able to build policy, to build things that would really help children in the long run. So for me, it was the right move at the right time.
Still tears of sadness at the end of the year, or are there tears of joy?
No, you know, to me, education comes down to it, and it's the heart of relationships. It's something I blog about a lot, but I remember, and as an elementary principal, and I was not afraid to say this, but every day on morning announcements, I would tell the kids that I loved and cared about them and that we were there to serve them and we were there to do whatever it took. And there were times people would kind of turn their heads a little bit. And I said, listen, I have no shame about this. This to me comes about relationships, and we need to make sure that kids feel loved and cared for in our schools. You know, this is the time of year where you'll hear teachers say kind of that welcome back. You know, people are starting up in the next couple of days, you know, and you'll hear that old adage of like, well, don't smile until Thanksgiving. And I would always say, like, who are you? Are you human? Like, is that what you want for your own child? Like, a teacher that doesn't smile to Thanksgiving? Like, are you really an educator? And, yeah, I hope I just offended some people out there. Seriously, you know, for me it comes down to relationships. And so, you know, as a classroom teacher, and Todd, I know you're just following your work and down there at Navasota now, and I know you're very much into this type of thing as well, but I remember my first couple years in teaching, and especially fourth grade, and the first thing I would do is, like, the first day, like, I had, like, the index cards on the desk and the books on the desk, and I started very traditionally, all right, like, write your name up top, boys and girls, and write your mailing address in case I ever use it, and write your mom's phone number on there. And I probably bored the heck out of the kids that first day or two of school thinking, like, all right, we got to do all the logistical stuff. And on one hand, I feel kind of bad because I know a lot of kids are going back to that this week. And it doesn't mean we don't collect information or we don't organize. But after the first, the second year of teaching fourth grade, I'm like, this isn't working. I got to do something different. So we actually spent the first week, and I went and talked to my principal, and I said, look, like, I know you want us teaching curriculum on day two and doing guided reading by, like, day four, but here's my plan. We're going to sit there, and we're going to just build a team. So we did team-building activities. By the end of the week, kids designing team-building activities, and we just had fun for the first week of school. And we created a culture in that classroom that, number one, you matter. Number two, like, we're going to have fun together because education is going to be fun. And number three, we're going to put high expectations in class. And we, you know, we designed our team, you know, expectations. Instead of rules, we had expectations. And, you know, and it was just a really – I learned a lot in the process of teaching of things that were very traditional that just weren't working. And just – I wanted to do a little bit differently. So – but it comes back to, again, the heart of relationships really is the foundation of all that we do.
Now, tell us a little about your transition now and what it was and what it's like in the new role, because now you're outside of the school system per se. So explain a little bit about how that came about and what you're doing now.
Sure. I currently work for the Alliance for Excellent Education. We are one of the top nonprofits. I don't work. People often say that, you know, do you work for the federal government? Are you working for the White House? Are you working for the Department of Ed? We are a bipartisan group, one of the top groups related to education in the nation. So our mission and vision is really that college and career readiness, all students will graduate. We also take a look at especially those that are underserved or underprivileged in those areas. But part of my team is I'm part of the Alliance, but part of the Center for Digital Learning. So my current role, my team oversees Digital Learning Day. So if people are, that's kind of one of the flagships people are pretty familiar with. We had about 10 million people take part last year. And then I also oversee something about called Project 24, which we can talk about a little bit at some point tonight, a free digital learning implementation framework for the nation. But you just asked about my transition. So I left the Quakertown School District back in May, and Quakertown was a great district. I enjoyed my time there, and it was difficult leaving. I didn't have my applications out. I wasn't looking around. I absolutely loved what I did and loved my role there. But we've been tied to the Alliance through Digital Learning Day. The program that I oversaw, the program that we had, was featured on Digital Learning Day 2 years ago. We were one of three districts in the nation that were featured. We had developed a program where at the high school level, students could take any combination of online courses with face-to-face courses. We had students that would come and go throughout the day, kind of like a college campus feel is really what we wanted to design it. And so when I moved over, the Alliance had called me after this year. I was on a panel with Governor Wise and some other people on Digital Learning Day this year, and shortly thereafter said, you know, what's going to take to get you to D.C.? And for me and for my family, I was not moving, so I actually don't live in Washington, D.C. I head down there a few times a month. But it was it's an interesting transition. You know, Todd, it was different when I was in a school setting, moving from a classroom teacher to to an administrator, but at the same time, I still got to see kids. I still got to know the families that I was working with. Now my role is incredibly different. About 6 weeks ago, I testified in front of Congress. I'm currently working alongside the White House and the Department of Ed on some very large initiatives that will be coming out in the very, very near future. I work with all the different state departments, all of them, and organizations like CCSSO and CETA. At the district level, I had no idea who they are, and now I realize that they're some of the top organizations in education across the nation. And so my role is very, very different. So in the same sense, I'm learning a lot. So I was much more on the local side, the district side, working with, you know, school districts and school boards. but now it's much more at the federal level. So my team and we at the Alliance will work on something like E-rate modernization. So if you take a look at the how E-rate was modernized, a lot of my team had a tremendous impact on that and how that was working. Now, I don't have my classroom of 22 kids anymore, but E-rate modernization, having a hand in that, impacts about 16 million children. So although the relationship there is different, I get the satisfaction out of being able to help state leaders and develop state leaders and being able to help the White House and the Department of Ed set that vision of what education should be, can be, and will be down the road for the kids that we serve.
So you mentioned speaking in Congress over the summer, and I saw a lot of that on Twitter happening. Like, just can you just elaborate a little bit more about like what specifically you were doing, you know, in front of
sure.
Congress?
Sure. One of the things that Congress is looking at right now, you kind of had a perfect storm going on, but it relates to data and privacy. So what you had in the public setting is you had the whole Target bit. I was personally affected by Target. My credit card number was stolen. Had to go through that nonsense. So a lot of people out there, it was in the news every night. So people kind of fearing that data. Then you had a handful of things that were going on out there. There's currently and I'm trying to think of the name of there's a company in bankruptcy court right now that as part of the bankruptcy hearing, they're an early intervention company, and they're trying to sell all the student data that they have as part of the bankruptcy setting. But in the contracts with the school districts, they never said in the contracts that they couldn't sell it. But if I'm a school district, huge red flag. So what we were talking about and then the hearing in the House was related to data and privacy. And so I testified alongside various people, a State Department person, somebody from the software industry, and somebody from the Fordham Institute. And we were taking a look at, and there's real concern at, how are districts keeping student data secure? You know, you had the Google side of things, or, you know, are they scanning email or are they not scanning email? Are they trying to market to kids or are they not trying to market to kids? So it's really a multifaceted issue. Number one, you have what are we doing as school districts with data? So I've been a champion and a proponent of, you know, I think data can really help what we do. It can help us personalize the instruction for every child. But at the same sense, do we over-collect data? You know, I think sometimes as districts we collect and collect and collect, and we have to ask ourselves, well, what are we doing with it? You know, I'm all about high quality assessments and authentic assessments, but one of the things that I really agree with is the saying, you can't fatten a calf by weighing it more. And so we really need to be really careful in terms of how much data are we collecting, because that data takes time, and most importantly, what are we doing with it? So then once we have it, what does it look like? So districts often struggle with teachers where they say to a teacher, you know, here's the six different places you have to go to get all of the data that you need for your children. And that's the struggle for teachers, understandably so. So you have the data collection there, the data privacy piece. Having been at the district level from the technology end, what do you do with all that data? How do you keep it secure? How do you keep it secure so that way your student information isn't overexposed? But what Congress is really starting to look at here is taking a look at a lot of the third parties that we have out there. So whether it's your student information system, the people that track your lunch that also collect patients for parents, all of those different aspects of the partners that we work with, they don't necessarily fall under FERPA. Now, FERPA is your essentially your privacy Act that protects parents inside the educational setting, but if I'm a company that's out there, an ed tech company, I don't necessarily fall under FERPA. So one of the things that they're looking at in Congress is FERPA needed? Do we need to revise FERPA to extend it to anybody that holds on to student data, even if they're not an educational institute? But then second to that is how do we keep that data secure and private so when that contract ends? So what they're really starting to look at as well is those contracts. Now, I can tell you, I've been a tech director. I've signed dozens and dozens of those types of third-party contracts. And 3 years ago, my mantra was not, okay, once we leave or if we cease that contract or if our contract expires and we don't renew, what do they do with all that student information? You know, I get the use and the need to use that student information to help personalize learning. There's some things that are really interesting going on out there. There's a district in Colorado that passed earlier this summer that parents could opt out of data collection by teachers. What does that even look like? Like, how in the world do you teach being like, oh, sorry, Johnny, can't collect data from you. I can't personalize for you today, so I got to teach right to the middle. Mm-hmm. I don't even understand what that – California just passed something earlier this week. I don't think it was necessarily a bad thing. It was really holding the expectations high of all the different vendors that were out there, and I think that's a good thing. But going back to your question related to the congressional piece, it was really all of that, taking a look at how are data – and that's how I got – put into it is, you know, I could speak from a classroom end, from a principal end, from a district level admin end as to what they're doing with the data, but then also how is it secure? and where are the privacy of the kids? I'm a parent. I have two little ones, and I get, you know, I don't want my children marketed to at 7 years old in schools. I understand that. I want to make sure their information is highly secure and that privacy is absolutely vital. I get that as well. But we can't go and overarch and then rule out and remove some of the tools that our teachers need every day to serve our kids.
So, Tom, what is something that you've accomplished in the past year that you are really proud of accomplishing?
I'm going to be the first one to say that I don't think I've accomplished really anything on my own. And it's just I don't want to stand here and say here's something that I've done, because anything that I do at the Alliance is an amazing team effort. I have an incredible team of talented people that are teaching me a lot every day, as well as when back in my time in Quakertown, it was never about me. You know, I was a lot of times the one that would be able to be in THE Journal or Tech and Learning Magazine or District Administration, and we got a lot of that, but it was never about me. It's always about the kids. It's always about who we serve. And I've been fortunate to have such an incredible team along the way. And so part of, I guess you can, let me answer this, part of what I'd say I'm most proud of in that regard is the success of those around me, the success of the children that we serve, the ability to do things differently, so that the programs that we built in Quakertown were very different than your traditional. But we saw some of our highest assessment results ever from students. We saw highest levels of college admittance ever. We saw graduation rates go up. But we did things in a non-traditional fashion. So I will say that's one of the things that I'm most proud of, because our kids were our kids and how they did were much better. And to me, students are at the forefront of all we're doing. So I would say that's what we're most proud of. But I would also say that was the success of every teacher, every administrator, our community and whatnot that we did together as a team.
Well, Todd told me you do in fact know how to read. So I'll ask this question. What's something that you're reading right now or have read maybe in the last year or so that you would kind of recommend to, you know, maybe it's educational related, maybe it's not.
Sure. I'm going to throw out a book from my good friend, Eric Schanninger. I had Eric, the Alliance, we do a series of webinars as well. Right now I'm doing a Project 24 leadership series, and I had Eric on Thursday. And I'm going to throw out his book on digital leadership. It is now a bestseller. Now, disclaimer, Eric is one of my best friends. But in all honesty, it is one of the best books out there on digital leadership. And the reason that I'm going to share that is because I really think there is an incredible crisis in our nation when it comes to that. Part of my work with all the different state departments and the 14,000 districts in our nation is really taking a look at so much of this and how much this comes back to leadership. You know, we're looking at, I work a lot with digital stuff, obviously, but you can have a principal that can be the greatest roadblock in a building to all of this. Yep. And really shut things down. But you can also, on the flip side, have a principal that can be the greatest enabler and encourager and create that culture of innovation. So I guess that the one thing that I would share, especially in a back to school, is for our leaders that are out there, that they have so much on their shoulders and there's so much on their plates and they're running around like crazy, but one of their main jobs is to create a culture of innovation where their teachers can take risks, where their teachers feel empowered, and a lot of that is through digital leadership. And Eric's book is, I think, a great example and just a great resource for that. When I was back in Quakertown, I bought it for every one of my colleagues and just said, look, like, you don't have to be the Twitter guru. That's not what this is about. This is about creating a culture in your school of innovation. Eric refers to the seven pillars, from communication and being like the storyteller in chief to whatnot. And so that's something that I've read, something I am reading. It's something that I did with Eric this past week in terms of a webinar through the Alliance, but just a great resource for our nation's leaders, because to me, schools and leadership, you see a lot in terms of successful schools. You see a great leader at the helm doing things differently in some of our most successful schools. Now that I'm at the federal level and can work with districts all around the nation, that is one thing that I'm seeing time and time again of success stories. There's somebody at the forefront, and it's not always the superintendent. It's not even always the principal, but that's leading and doing things differently for the children we serve.
And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that book, because that was the same book I gave to all of my upper administration and to my whole admin team, too, because I was like, this guy's brilliant. This is the vision that we're going to be choosing to jump after, because I just think it's a great book as well, and a definite must-read for anybody in any type of leadership role.
Yep, totally agree. Tom,
when you're having a really rough day, what do you do to recenter yourself?
Yeah, you know, good question. When I was an elementary principal, my answer would have been, I go hang out in kindergarten. I had back when I was a building principal, I had an unwritten rule with my kindergarten teacher. Listen, if I'm coming down to your classroom and I'm just sitting there to hang out with kids, it has nothing to do with supervision and you. It is all about me, and I'm having a bad day, and I'm just here to hang out with five-year-olds because they're going to make me smile and get me back to the heart of why I do what I do. Now what I do, being at a very different level, obviously, is honestly, I connect with people in my PLN, my personal learning network, when I'm feeling discouraged or I'm feeling like I got to get back to the heart of what I'm doing. So I do that through Twitter. I do that through Voxer. Voxer is a great app if those viewers aren't familiar with it, where I can connect with, you know, a principal in New York or somebody like you, Todd, down in Texas. And, you know, if I'm struggling with something or, you know, in the same sense, if I'm just feeling like, you know, I kind of need to be lifted up. I have a Voxer group of about 10 guys. If I started listing their names, many of them would be very, very well known, Eric being one of them on there. But we just have fun every day. We only, in that one group, we're not even talking educational stuff. We're just having fun as guys and talking about fantasy football and just enjoying life and you know what we're doing on vacation and that kind of stuff. So I think again that's going back to relationships. So if I'm having a bad day,
or, is one of them? Oh look, is one of them Aaron Klein?
Look who it is!
Talk about a perfect transition, Aaron. Aaron, it's so great to see you on the show. Nice for you to stop on by.
The party crasher.
We were just talking, Aaron, about how Tom was talking about how sometimes whenever he's having a rough day to recenter himself, he gets on Voxer and talks to different people and all kinds of stuff like that.
Showing you're muted, Aaron.
Are you there?
Yes, somebody's muted.
Well, that transition didn't go as well. Aaron, can you hear us? Because you're muted and I'm asking you a question.
Yes.
There we go. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I don't know if you heard what I was saying, but I said it was a perfect time you coming in, considering we were just talking about how Tom said when he has to recenter himself, now it helps with some of his PLN and getting on Voxer or Twitter and talking to some of them. And I thought, well, look, there's Aaron since he's kind of talking, and I know that we talk all the time on Voxer, us three.
We do. We actually have our own little group. That's good.
But Tom, I had a surprise entrance for Aaron for you, because one of the things I also wanted to jump into, and I thought that both of you would be great to talk about this, would be something else that you're a part of right now, which is classroom design and working with different school districts on that. Correct, Tom?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've been collaborating with another friend of ours, Nick Provenzano, online as the Nerdy Teacher, and James Sanders, who used to work for the Department of Ed, who's now out in California doing some consulting and ed tech type work. But out in Michigan, South Haven's one of the districts we're working with currently on really a district redesign and really helping to think differently. So what's neat is we all really have different roles and different areas of expertise. You know, you have somebody like Aaron that's known really, really well from a classroom design standpoint of what it should look like aesthetically and those brain-based aspects of things. For me, it's very much the back end of the technology, so I'm working with the tech team and ed tech inside the classroom and what that looks like. And then you have Nick, who's doing a lot from a project-based end and some Google Apps training and whatnot. So it's really a team approach, but it's a systemic cultural shift. I was out there last week on Monday to give the keynote back to that whole staff on their back-to-school piece on creating that culture of innovation and creating that culture shift and what that actually looks like. So we've been doing a lot of work with in that district in particular, but helping to really redesign and see what that looks like.
Aaron, anything you wanted to add about the classroom design stuff and working with Tom? Since this is our All About Tom show, anything you want to add about Tom or tell people about?
No, it's been really a really interesting perspective, because when I was brought onto the project, I was asked to help with the brain-friendly design components, but two people who I knew that I really immediately first wanted to connect with. One was Tom, and then the other was Nick. And then, of course, getting to connect with James as well. But the three of them joining our team, so we've got four now. It's just been a tremendous dynamite team. And then now we're going to work with your staff this weekend. So I couldn't be more happy. So I don't want to, like, take up time and talk. But, yeah, no, it's been a fantastic opportunity, and I can't be more excited about it.
Yes, I'm very excited for you, Tom, and you, Aaron, to both be in the same state as me and Chris.
Hey, Aaron, don't you have a website about classroom design?
Classroomcribs.com.
Yeah, classroomcribs.com. Yeah. There you go. Free publicity
and
right here.
Chris, you're amazing. Thank you.
Well, you weren't going to do it, so I do it for you.
Thank you. It's not my brainchild. It's actually AJ Giuliani. He is the fantastic brainchild behind that. It was his idea, and he decided to start that, and he asked if I would come on board, and I said absolutely. So Together, he and I kind of created this vision, and then we brought Ben Gilpin, an admin on in Michigan as well, and Ben's input has just been tremendous. And then getting Nick and James and Tom in on that project as well has just been a really, really good, I don't know, just all around good. Like, I'm overwhelmed by it, so, yeah.
Really, well, Tom, good. Jumping back into you, what would you say is the biggest thing that you have learned this last year? That you've learned?
Also, this question could also be asked, what did you fail miserably at in the last year?
So, you know, that's an interesting question to ask. I'll be very honest here. I used to have a very jaded opinion of Washington. I used to have a very jaded opinion of state departments and felt that they were very much just kind of out to get us in school districts. I used to think, quite honestly, that people in Washington and our federal government were just completely clueless, inept, and incompetent, and were just out to whatever, speaking as honestly as I can. And now that I've been able to work alongside some of our senators and congressmen and those that are at the State Department, now that I've really been able to work alongside very closely, literally on a daily basis with people at the White House and the Department of Ed, I've gotten a lot of hope. And it's not a political thing at all. It's not a left or a right or Republican or Democrat thing at all. It's really not. But I hope for our kids, because when I'm working side by side with many of our state departments, and when I'm working side by side with a group like CCSSO or a group like, I could go on and on, CEDAR or whatnot, taking a look at that, I'm working with really passionate people that are really good at what they do, that are really trying to help kids in a variety of ways. So I think for me, it was one of those, my perception of the way it was totally off. And now that I'm working alongside of those people, and again, people at the Department of Ed on a daily basis, I'm very encouraged by what I see. So some of the initiatives that will be forthcoming that I alluded to earlier are just really good things for kids. And I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat, they're really good things. The other side, we were talking about the congressional piece before, but the other side is, you know, the media portrays Washington as everything is so polar, left or right, and there's really no middle ground. But so many times, and I've worked on a variety of bills already in Congress, and taking a look at it, it's been bipartisan. It's been a Republican and a Democrat coming together and saying, like, what's good for kids here? And that to me has been really encouraging, because you don't often see that kind of stuff. I don't care what news channel you watch, you don't often see it on there. So it's really been a very eye-opening experience for me.
So if I had to guess, most of our audience is made up of teachers, educators, and some of those, a lot of those being new teachers. If you had your current self, knowing everything you know now, what would you go back and give some advice to your, you know, new teacher self? Basically, sure. New teacher advice, yeah.
So my first year teaching, let me just tell you a little bit about that, and it's something that is very emotional for me, and I think back to my first year. I graduated college, and I left at 21. There I was a male that wanted to teach elementary, and I thought I knew, like, I was ready to take that world on, and I had student taught, and I remember that door closing for the very first time, and feeling like, oh my gosh, like, is this really my kids and my classroom. I'm going to make this really, really short, but in the very first year, I had a student in my classroom pass away by an accidental hanging, not in my physical classroom, but it was on an in-service day. And I'm not going to get into the whole story there, but about a month prior to that, my mentor was killed in a car accident just before Easter. And that year was completely transformational for my entire life, because I came out of college like happy-go-lucky, ready to go, and just thinking that this teaching was all about content and teaching about, you know, test scores and everything that I had learned in college. But by the end of that year, I had loved those children like my own, because we had been through three of the most emotional months of all of our lives combined. And what I learned there that first year is where we started early on, that education is about relationships, and it's about helping kids understand that they matter. So the advice that I would have for those early teachers is, get to know your children inside and out. Show them that you love and care them. Treat them like your own. Teach to every child like it is your own child. You know, again, now having my own children, I want those teachers treating them like their own child and having high expectations for them. But if we teach every child like they're our own child in our classroom, you know, we're not just going to be popping in the movie every Friday afternoon, or we're not going to be calling out sick every Monday in May because we're at the beach. It looks different. So my advice would be, make relationships front and foremost of what you're doing in the classroom, and other things start to fall in line. Of course, the curriculum is absolutely vital, but get to know those kids first, and they'll start to care about what you do know.
Cool.
And I love that you talk about that, Tom. I have a question for you. What is one interaction that you think that you've had either with a parent or a child that you feel will truly stick with you for a lifetime?
The stumper, yes. Stumper.
We see we brought in.
You put me on the spot here.
We had to bring in the big guns for that question.
That's right.
Man, you guys are putting the talking about my first year teaching and whatnot, and putting the emotions down on things. So I mentioned my first couple of years, and now that those my first few teachers are our first few sets of kids are now off and getting married and off having babies and whatnot. I've had multiple interactions with them since, and I can remember a time and a place where I had a child that that was in a foster home, and we were the sixth foster home within, I believe, a year period, because that child really struggled from a behavior standpoint. And it was, I believe, my second year teaching. And I remember towards the end of that year, that child starting to call me dad. And I struggled with that kind of like in the standpoint of like it was – I almost felt a little awkward as the teacher, but at the same point, like I knew that that was a relationship. So that boy contacted me about 6 months ago to tell me that he was getting married and to tell me that I was the greatest influence on his life, and that's why he was still alive today. To me, and I don't say that pridefully, but to me that was a relationship that I can remember when he was 10 and remember when he didn't have a quote-unquote traditional mom and dad, and remember I tried to fill that role the best that I can and eating lunch with him virtually on a daily basis and trying to encourage him emotionally. And here he is with a full-time job about to get married. And so it's just neat to see that progression over time, and it shows us, you know, it's hard sometimes in education where we're pouring our heart and soul into things, but we can't see 10 years down the road. And now that I've had a glimpse to see about 15 years down the road and look back, those types of relationships are life-changing. So for me, that was an example of that was worth far more than any paycheck I've ever gotten.
I love that story, and I think that's the perfect example of why we're in this profession, is for moments like that where we impact kids far more than on an academic standpoint. So thank you for sharing that, Tom. So, Tom, the question that we always like to end with our guests is, what is something that you are really passionate about right now?
I would say my go-to for that right now would be personalized professional development. I'm finishing up a book co-authored by Jeff Zoll for Corwin on personalized learning plans for teachers. And the reason I'm so passionate about it is, again, I talked earlier about a crisis in the nation related to leadership that I really saw. But I think with professional learning, we have the same type of crisis out there. We have many school districts that are still going back to the top-down, one-size-fits-all approach to professional learning, the sit-and-get, the 4 to 6 hour workshop on a Thursday, you know, and teachers around the nation are kind of rolling their eyes and struggling with that, and understandably so. We're wasting so much time, effort, and money in poor professional learning opportunities. So my turnaround piece to that is helping people take ownership over their own professional learning. Help them understand that professional learning is not a 4 or 5 time a year, handful of hours over the course of the year opportunity, but it's something that's ongoing, it's every day, and it's systemic, it's cultural, and it's just the way we do things every day, so that at the end of the day, we're better for kids tomorrow than we were yesterday. And that only happens when we get passionate about our own learning and helping people get connected. So through all of that, you asked about an area, it's personalized learning for teachers. You know, every district in the nation has been talking about personalized learning for kids forever, but now it's also time, you know, we can't just talk about personalized learning for kids and then do the exact opposite to our staff with a one-size-fits-all approach. So finding ways to personalize learning for teachers where we cultivate teacher voice, where we cultivate that teacher leadership, where they're an active participant and also leading personalized PD, where we as administrators, it's not about us, it's not about one person in central office, it's about teachers and what they need and giving them a voice as the professionals. You know, we need to stop herding teachers like cattle into large group rooms, talking at them for 2 hours and calling it professional development. So let's allow them to have a voice, to really to be able to share what they do know and to be able to treat them like professionals as it is, but then to also hold the expectations high. We need to move professional development conversations from, you know, here's what I attended, this is the hours that I earned, and here's my checklist that I'm handing in at the end of the year evaluation, to here's what I learned, here's how it transformed my teaching, and this is why my kids are better from it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic answer. Tom, thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening. I know that it looks like you're at the beach house this weekend, and I appreciate you I'm glad the bandwidth held up out there. So
yeah,
that's
fantastic. You bet. It's a pleasure being here with you guys. Thank you.
How can people connect with you?
Sure. I'd say connect with me on Twitter. I'm Thomas C. Murray. You can check out my website, thomascmurray.com, as well. And I'm here to serve from a district or a state end in any capacity in that regard at the Alliance for Excellent Education. And they can check that out at all4ed.org. And with that, I mentioned earlier, we have a number of webinars coming up. We just had one with Eric that I referenced last week. We have one with Erin and AJ and Ben Gilpin. She mentioned classroomcribs.com in a couple weeks. And then we have one with Tony Sinanis and Joe Sanfilippo regarding branding your school a few weeks after that. So they can also reach out at the Alliance as well.
Amazing. And you can connect with us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ. We use the hashtag EduAllStars. Our website is EduAllStars.com. And if you go to EduAllStars.com/podcast, you can see all 63 episodes there. Go back and check some of the archives with a lot of the people that were mentioned in this show tonight. Lastly, on iTunes, you can search us out with EduAllStars, no spaces, and find all those episodes there if you want to listen to them on the way to work.
And make sure you join us next Sunday, September 7th, as we have Michigan's Teacher of the Year, Gary Abood, who will be on at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. And don't forget to visit miamidevice.org to check out all the speakers, sessions, and everything else that's been planned that will be for sure the EdTech event of the year. Thanks so much again, Tom, for doing this interview. I know that you had to give up some of your vacation time, so we really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us today.
Anything for you guys.
Thanks, Aaron, for jumping in and hanging out with us.
Thank you, guys. And just a quick shout out to Gary, who is amazing. He'll be your guest next week, a fellow Michigan teacher. I love him. Awesome. And Miami, Todd and I live down there together, so I'm excited about that.
Yep.
Very cool. Thank you.
See you guys next week.
All right. Take care.